Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, L. Lee Merriweather, here in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. The sun is just now starting to come out, and it is a gorgeous day. Thank you so much for joining us. Honor Your Pet is a show covering all things which honors our pets and our relationships with them. These include innovative and holistic pet care topics, as well as addressing the difficult but honorable end of life times and healing grief from pet loss. The underlying focus here is how we can best care for our pets and ourselves as pet parents. Honor Your Pet recognizes that pets are our family and honors all that they give to us. Pet Honoring recently hosted the Asheville Angel Pets Conference in April. This was to help us address pet end-of-life issues, how we can better help heal from pet loss, as well as topics of caregiver support. You can read more about this at angelpetsconference.com. Also coming up is the next United Pet Honoring Ceremony, which will be held June 9th to coincide with World Pet Memorial Day. It's free to send in a pet name to be honored, and it's free to call in and listen. People from all over the world send in names of pets to be honored in this simple but meaningful time to send love and blessings to our pets. You can read more about that on pethonoring.com. Also, sponsorship is now available. If you would like to support this mission and sponsor a show, including ad time, please contact me at 828-367-6097, or you can email me at pets@pethonoring.com. So today we have two wonderful guests, Lola Ball, the author of When Your Dog Gets Cancer, and Dr. Beth Marchitelli will be joining us for the second half of the show to help us better understand what pet hospice is. Let me welcome our first guest, Lola Ball, author of When Your Dog Gets Cancer, Making the Right Decisions for You and Your Dog. So welcome, Lola.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. You wrote this book out of personal experience from when your own dog got cancer. And I love that because it comes with such a personal experience and you have so much to say for the everyday person, the average dog owner, with real and practical, insightful tips. So just wanted to first say hats off to you because it is a tremendous resource.
Well, thank you so much. It was my whole intent in writing the book to ensure that other pet owners didn't go through what I went through when my first dog got cancer. And I felt very strongly about helping other people kind of get up to speed more quickly on cancer and what they could do to help their dog so that they wouldn't, you know, spend as much time as I did figuring out the hard way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure it's overwhelming and can be difficult to navigate through everything you need to do at that time.
Absolutely. I did not have any personal experience with cancer, you know, in humans and dogs, you know, at all. And so it was a really big learning curve for me. And it was, you know, it was very overwhelming, absolutely.
Sure.
Because, you know, you're concerned about your dog, but you also, you know, want to make sure that you have information available to you so that you can make the right decisions. But, you know, trying to find that balance was very difficult and very overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah, you did such a great job also of going over the different types of cancers and the different types of testing and diagnostics and what's available that, you know, it's really will put people ahead of the game when faced with something like this.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah. And so you not only overview what to look for, but you also talk about establishing a baseline. Mm-hmm. And I know our listeners would like to know about both of those.
Yes.
So what do we look for? And then what do you mean by establishing a baseline?
Well, you know, as with many diseases, cancer is most easily treated if it's caught earlier. And
Sure. So
where having that baseline comes into play is, you know, if you know from, you know, the moment that your dog comes home with you, whether, you know, he or she is a puppy or a full-grown or senior dog, you know, what you need to do is evaluate your dog where they are, you know, from the moment they come home. So that involves, you know, being very familiar with what is normal for your dog. You know, every dog
yeah.
is different, just like every person is different. And so what I advise is, number one, keeping a journal that, you know, you have for the full life of your dog. And,
nice.
You know, periodically, maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks, go over, literally, you know, put your hands over your entire dog's body. You know, look in their eyes, look in their ears, look in their mouth, you know, feel all along their arms, their legs, their chest, their back, and just kind of look for anything, you know, of note. You know, there are some dogs, like my dog Scooby, who just recently passed away. He was, a senior dog. He was 14. He had a lot of lumps and bumps. You know, he was
right.
prone to fatty tumors, and that was just kind of, you know, his situation. And so I just, you know, every week or so, I would, you know, feel over his whole body and notice all of the different lumps that were there. And, you know, I would jot this down in a journal so that I could kind of keep track. Okay, you know, this time he has a lump, you know, this lump on his stomach. Oh, okay, he's had that lump for several months. It hasn't changed in general size or shape. So, you know, I'm just going to keep monitoring this. And if I notice any changes, then I'll bring it to the attention, you know, of my vet. And, of course, during our annual exams, you know, I would always call out, okay, he has, you know, these few lumps. They've all been there for, you know, a year or however long the amount of time was. And, you know, the vet would take a look and we would discuss, okay, do we need to do anything here or is it, you know, is this just kind of a fatty tumor kind of situation? And, you know, we would make a determination and then, you know, move forward with that. So, you know, some dogs are going to be more prone to having things like fatty tumors. Others, you know, won't. And so if you are really familiar with your dog's body, you know, then you'll know when something unusual happens. Like there have been situations with Scooby where, you know, there was a growth on his cheek at one point. And, you know, as I was evaluating it over the course of, you know, a month or two, I noticed that it was growing in size quite rapidly, and that was very
right.
concerning to me. So, you know, I made an appointment with the vet, and we decided, okay, this is a little concerning. Let's go ahead and remove this, and that's what we did. And in that particular case, it was benign, but, you know, there are, you know, many situations where, you know, the tumor or cyst can be malignant, and, you know, catching it early and doing something about it early really gives you a lot more options. And so another thing about, you know, the baseline is there are some dogs that, you know, say eat a lot of grass in the yard and, you know, might vomit afterwards, you know, and over time that might just be, you know, normal for that particular dog. If your dog has never done that and then all of a sudden starts doing that, you know, that's something to note in your journal
sure.
as an unusual kind of behavior. And so so just kind of understanding your dog and what is normal for them is what I mean by having that baseline. And so
yeah.
over time, you can see if there are deviations to that baseline for your dog. And so some of the symptoms that you can look for, you know, unfortunately, a lot of them are pretty innocuous. They're, you know, in and of themselves, you wouldn't necessarily think immediately, oh, that must be cancer. You know, there could be a lot of other diseases that could potentially, you know, cause some of these symptoms. And so some of the things I'm talking about are things like, you know, wounds that don't heal or, you know, lameness in a particular leg. And what's interesting is that for the symptoms that I'm going to talk about, I have a story related to that symptom for almost every one of these in my book. And so that was, you know, one of the reasons that I feel it's really important to have this list of potential symptoms is because there are cases where these symptoms could be cancer. Of course, not
right.
every time you see the symptom will it be cancer, but I
right.
think it's just helpful to know that, wow, even something that you wouldn't have thought could potentially lead down that path, it does have that potential. Another symptom would be persistent coughing. That happened in a dog named
sure.
Rumor, and he wound up having lung cancer.
Wow.
Unusual growths or unexplained skin conditions, you know, that could also potentially be a cancerous situation. The sudden appearance of seizures or sudden blindness. The sudden blindness was in a dog named Putter who wound up having lymphoma. Appearance of blood in urine, that was one of my personal experiences with Porter. That was the first sign that I knew that something was wrong, and it turned out he had hemangiosarcoma, which is a very aggressive, fast-moving cancer. Vomiting and lack of appetite, that was also from a personal experience of mine with Jasper, and he had a mast cell tumor cancer. Pain during normal everyday activities. So if your dog is normally, you know, runs around, jumps on the bed, jumps off the bed, and then all of a sudden one time they jump off the bed and they yelp in pain, well, that's unusual, you know.
Right. Should strike a flag, right.
Exactly. And so that was the case of Alexei, and he had bone cancer. He had osteosarcoma in the, you know, when he jumped off the bed. He felt, you know, the pain from the weakness in his bone, the cancer in his bone, and that's what led them to, you know, start to investigate and figure out where this pain was coming from. Another possible symptom would be sensitivity during physical examination. You know, so again, you know, if you're doing this baseline, if you have this baseline for your dog, and you're, you know, every week or so, you're, you know, palpating on your dog, touching them, you know, going all over their skin and their body, if all of a sudden there's an area that's sensitive that wasn't sensitive, say, the week before or 2 weeks before, you know that there's something potentially going on there. So in the case of a dog named Lewis, he had cancer in his rectal area, and so it was during a routine visit to the veterinarian when they were taking his temperature that he, you know, exhibited signs of discomfort when that was happening, more so than the normal discomfort that,
right.
that dogs exhibit when they're having their temperature taken. And, you know, that was what caused them to, you know, do some more investigation to figure out where that sensitivity was coming from. So you can see that there are all kinds of, you know, symptoms that, you know, in and of themselves, they could be perfectly innocuous, but, you know, they definitely should have some further investigation and observation before you completely, you know, rule them out as, you know, potential signs of cancer.
Sure. And I love the idea of establishing a baseline and knowing your dog. And, you know, some dogs may be more expressive or more stoic than others. You know, I know my dog is very expressive. You know, I know when she has a hiccup or a hangnail, she's very, very, you know, expressive. And, but, you know, my friend's dog is very stoic. You wouldn't know if she was in pain. And so it's important to know how your pet also, you know, expresses, you know, discomfort or pain, and so that you can be aware of what's going on with them.
Absolutely. I think that's a really important point to bring up, because there is so much variability in terms of their character, you know, and their behavior and how they adapt to things like, you know, pain or stress. Some dogs will withdraw if they're in pain. Other dogs will get aggressive. So, you know, again, like you said, knowing your dog, having that baseline is so critical.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I think that is a fabulous tip, and I know there's more details in your book about that for people to access. We're going to take a quick few-minute break, and we will be right back, and we're going to discuss what to ask your vet when your dog is diagnosed with cancer. Be right back. Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Honor Your Pet understands that pets are our family and honors our relationship with them and all they give. The website is pethonoring.com, and the email address is pets@pethonoring.com. Let me know what you need and how I can help. Hi, and welcome back. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and we are here with Lola Ball, the author of When Your Dog Gets Cancer, Making the Right Decisions for You and Your Dog. And we were just overviewing the importance of establishing a baseline with your dog, knowing your dog's personality, and going over, you know, what they are like. But if your dog does get cancer, Lola, what are important things to remember to ask your vet? What would we need to know?
Absolutely. So of course, the first thing you want to know is what kind of cancer your dog has, because you know, some cancers are more aggressive than others, like hemangiosarcoma or osteosarcoma. Other cancers can be, you know, slower moving. And so it's really important that you understand what type. Also, different cancers respond to different kinds of treatment. You know, some cancers really don't respond to chemotherapy or radiation and, you know, can only be removed surgically. Other cancers, it's not possible to remove them surgically. You know, you have to employ chemotherapy or radiation or another form of treatment. Another thing that's really important is, where is the cancer located? You know, is it in a place where, you know, you can easily do surgery, or, you know, if it's located in an organ that is, you know, necessary for survival, then obviously you can't remove it. So you need to consider other options. Also understanding, you know, the stage and grade of the tumor, you know, how advanced is it? Has the cancer already metastasized? Because that will, of course, limit your option. Also, you know, understanding what the typical progression is for that particular type of cancer, and how will that progression of the cancer manifest itself, you know, in your dog potentially. Looking at asking your vet for that type of cancer that your dog has, what, you know, recommended treatments they suggest, and then also, are there any risk factors of those recommended treatment plans?
Oh, sure, you know, what the risk factors are.
Exactly. And then also, you know, as much as we try not to think about this, I mean, we have to know how much the treatment costs.
Right.
Because, you know, not everyone can afford every treatment. And so, you know, you need to know up front what you're looking at and, what it's going to cost you, because that can be a huge impact for many, many families.
Sure.
Also understanding what the typical success rate is of that treatment. You know, if your veterinarian is advocating a particular treatment that maybe only has, you know, a 25% success rate, you know, you might want to take that into account, because, you know, you certainly don't want to put your dog through, you know, a whole, say, round of chemotherapy for a very low potential success rate. You know, so having that information up front will help you make an informed decision. You also need to evaluate, you know, the state of your dog's current health, and you can do that with your veterinarian's help. You know, asking them, well, you know, if your dog, like in the case of, you know, my dog Scooby, you know, he was 14 and he had several other conditions that made you know, treatment a little more challenging. He had laryngeal paralysis, which meant that any type of surgery had additional risks associated with it. So, you know, really having your vet explain to you how the current health of your dog will be affected by whatever treatment route, you know, you're considering is critical. Having that health history, previous current illnesses, again, that all factors into it. And given, your dog's age, does that play at all into the potential treatment? If your veterinarian is recommending, you know, something, say, like surgery, you know, what is your dog's experience with previous surgeries? You know, some dogs handle surgery better than others. Some dogs handle anesthesia better than others. And, you know, kind of having that history, having that information can help you make a more informed decision. So those are some of the things that I think are the most important things to remember to ask your veterinarian when you're talking about a cancer diagnosis. I also think it's really helpful to have someone else there with you.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's really hard to remember everything that the veterinarian says, and if you have a friend or a family member who can be there with you to take notes and be a little more objective. I mean, you're so, you know, we talked about being overwhelmed. I mean, you are so overwhelmed and so emotional about what the veterinarian is telling you and how this is affecting your dog, that it can be really hard to remember everything that they say to you. So having someone there is super helpful.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. I think bringing a notebook and a friend or another family member is fabulous.
Yeah.
What about the tests for diagnosing cancers in dogs?
Mm-hmm.
Are they definitive? Are there things we need to be aware of as far as that?
Absolutely. So are they definitive? Well, yes and no. There's a whole range of different types of tests that can be done. And, in my book, I go through them in more detail. But, you know, typically the rule of thumb is that as the test increases in its invasiveness with the dog's body, the accuracy increases, but of course the risk also increases. So, you can do things like blood tests and urine tests, and that will give you some indication potentially of, you know, whether there is a likelihood of cancer or not, but they're not going to be able to give you an absolute diagnosis. You can also invest in x-rays and ultrasound, which again are not super invasive. You know, it doesn't require any kind of surgical procedure. In some dogs, though, x-rays and ultrasound will require that they be anesthetized because some dogs won't stay still for the duration of, you know, the x-ray or the ultrasound
right.
to be performed. So that's something you need to consider. And again, if you're going to be using anesthesia, there are risks associated with that, particularly as the dog is, increasing in age. So that's something to consider. And again, in and of themselves, x-rays and ultrasound, you know, may not be totally conclusive. You may need to do additional tests, and some of those might be things like fine needle aspirates or biopsies, and potentially even more advanced surgeries. And what a fine needle aspirate is say, there are tumors in your dog. What they'll do is they'll insert a very, very fine long needle into the tumor, and they'll remove just a small sample of cells. That also is usually done in concert with an ultrasound because they need the ultrasound to help them direct the needle so that it goes actually into the tumor and not into, you know, some other organ. And so the problem is, though, is that because they're only getting a small sample of cells, where they're sampling might not be where the cancer is.
They might miss it, right?
Exactly. It might miss it. And so, again, even the fine needle aspirate is not always conclusive. And so they might need to do something a little more invasive, which would be a biopsy, where this is kind of like a mini surgery where they actually would go in and remove a small piece of the tumor so that they could do more extensive analysis. There is a risk there of potentially not getting a large enough sample size to be super conclusive, but you know, it does give you a little, you know, because the sample size is larger, you know, you potentially could get a more conclusive diagnosis. And then, of course, you know, if depending on your dog's particular situation, they may want to go ahead and, say, remove a tumor entirely if it's, you know, pressing on another organ or causing your dog a lot of pain or discomfort because of the location of the tumor. You know, one of Scooby's tumors was pressing right up against his bladder.
Right.
And that was causing a lot of, you know, discomfort for him. And so, you know, if that is, you know, the case where, say, it was pressing against an organ like the bladder so much so that your dog was incontinent, you know, or in excruciating pain, you know, that could be a situation where you would just remove it and then, you know, do a biopsy or analysis of the cells afterwards to see, you know, what the exact cancer was.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, yeah, and you've given us a lot to think about, a lot of questions to ask the vet, a lot of information here about the different types of tests and things to consider. And I know that when we're presented with the situation, what we want is, you know, the best for our dog and for our dog to heal. But sometimes we may not think about it from the dog's priorities or the dog's perspective. And tell us about that. What can you help us with there?
Yeah. So, you know, ultimately it's all about your dog's quality of life.
Okay.
You know, you really want to, like you said, be thinking about it from the perspective of the dog. You know, is in the situation of one of the dogs in my book that I had done an interview around was this dog, Kess. And, you know, Kess had lameness in her right leg, right rear leg. And, you know, she was unable to do the things that, you know, were fun for her. Like, she was an agility dog. She was very skilled in catching flying discs. And she loved to run around, really high energy. And because of the lameness in her leg, she wasn't able to do the things that she really wanted to do. And this was a situation where her owner, in spite of having fine needle aspirates and some biopsies done, they still did not have a cancer diagnosis, but yet she knew something was really, really wrong, and she opted to have Kess's leg amputated. And it was only through the veterinarian's insistence afterwards that they did another biopsy on the leg and then ultimately discovered that it was cancerous. And that was a kind of an accident. They wound up sending the biopsy to a different laboratory for analysis, and it turned out that laboratory was able to identify the cancer. So, you know, there's another piece of advice is if you're not getting the cancer diagnosis, you know, you can try sending your results to different laboratories because not all laboratories are created equal.
Right.
And so in the case of Kess, you know, it turned out that for that particular type of cancer, an amputation was exactly the right treatment. And once her leg was amputated, she was able to go back to, you know, being a flying disc agility dog. And she wound up, you know, placing in the state of Washington, even in spite of only being on three legs. And she
Wow.
was able to continue doing all of the things that she loved doing. And not having that leg was, you know, not an impediment at all. And so, you know, if your dog is, again, it kind of goes to that baseline, you know, understanding what makes your dog happy. You know, does your dog love going for walks or for long runs every day or, you know, catching flying discs? And if the cancer is preventing them from doing the things that they love, or, you know, in the case of Scooby loved to eat, you know.
Right.
And you know, towards the end, he wasn't eating. And, you know, that was something that was, you know, very hard for me to see, to observe with him, because I knew how much he loved his food and his treats. And, you know, he just wasn't able to do that at the end. And it was really heartbreaking. So really thinking about, you know, is your dog happy? Are they wagging their tail still? Do they want to play? You know, Are you having more good days than bad days? You know, as the cancer progresses, you know, you'll have bad days, and you'll know when you're having
right.
a bad day. But then you'll also have good days where it seems like, wow, you know, my dog doesn't even seem like they have cancer. But, you know, you really want to weigh those two factors, those two types of days, you know. And when you start to have more bad days than good days, then, you know that you really have to be thinking about what is the best thing to do for your dog.
Right.
Because they,
right.
you know, they don't care that they have cancer. To
right.
them, you know, they live in the present moment, you know, and it's all about what they're doing right now. It's not about, oh, I have cancer and, you know, something, you know, bad is going to happen in the future. Like, they don't think that way. They
right.
don't think, oh, yesterday I had a bad day and I wasn't feeling well. Today I'm having a good day. I'm feeling great. I mean, that's where they are.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, that is a lot to think about. And I certainly encourage everyone out there to get this book, When Your Dog Has Cancer. And the thing, when I read it, that I loved about it is that it had so much information, whether your dog has cancer or not.
Mm-hmm.
As a dog owner, you know, I really felt that it had just a tremendous amount of resources. So I would encourage people to get this, to go to your website. We have another guest coming up here in a minute, Beth, but would love to have you back to go into some of these other tips and suggestions on a different show. But tell us how, if you'd like, tell us how we can get a hold of you and where we can get more information.
Oh, absolutely. And I would love to come back. My whole mission is to just share with other people what I've learned from my experiences. But if people want to get a hold of me, I have a website at www.whenyourdoghascancer.org. And then you can also find me on Facebook at www.facebook.com/whenyourdoghascancer, all one word. And you can get in touch with me through either of those sites. And I would love to hear from people. I am happy to share, you know, what I have learned with my experiences with other people.
And you do webinars occasionally too, is that right?
Yes, I do. And I have
Wonderful.
Some links on my site to webinars that I've done in the past that are still available for viewing.
Wonderful. Great. Well, thank you, Lila, for being here and being a wonderful guest. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Beth Marchitelli on
Thank
Honor
you
Your
so
Pet.
Much.
Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Honor Your Pet understands that pets are our family and honors our relationship with them and all they give. The website is pethonoring.com, and the email address is pets@pethonoring.com. Let me know what you need and how I can help. Hi, and welcome back. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, L. Lee Merriweather, and we are here with our next guest. This is Dr. Beth Marchitelli. She runs Four Paws Farewell, which is a mobile pet hospice service in the Asheville, North Carolina area. So welcome to the show, Beth.
Thank you so much, Lee. I'm happy to be here.
So before we get into explaining what pet hospice is, and I know a lot of listeners out there want to know more about this, tell us how you got involved in this.
Sure. So I've been a veterinarian now for about 13 years, and throughout my career, I've always been very passionate about end-of-life veterinary care. It's just always been something that's been really close to my heart. And, you know, it really is a time that is so fragile and tender for both the pets and their owners. So it's always been something that's been incredibly close to my heart. And coincidentally, it just so happened that a friend of mine about 3 years ago had suggested to me that we start a mobile pet euthanasia service. And I thought that would be, you know, it was such a great idea, and I would love to provide that service for folks so they didn't have to bring their pets into the animal hospital when it was time. And shortly after that, I was prompted to attend the annual meeting of the International Association for Animal Hospice and Palliative Care, which is a wonderful organization committed to educating veterinarians and pet owners alike about how to provide high-quality, compassionate end-of-life care. And really through this meeting and connecting with a whole bunch of other veterinary professionals and other professionals in general, it really inspired me to expanding the service that we were going to provide a little bit further. And that meeting was really pivotal because it really inspired me to expand the scope of what we offered to not only home euthanasia, but also animal hospice and end-of-life services. So from there, Four Paws Farewell was started, and here we are today.
Well, first, I want to say that I know that there are a lot of listeners out there who had just no idea that this is something that could be done in the home. And I run across people all the time who are so relieved to know that this might be an option instead of, you know, having to go to the vet in a colder environment, that this could be done at home. So I think it's just tremendous. But tell us more about exactly what veterinary hospice is.
Sure. And so just to speak to what you had said earlier, I do think that it is becoming more and more available, and veterinarians have been providing home euthanasia services for years, but they haven't been readily available. They were mainly done, you know, after hours or at the lunch hour or when a veterinarian could actually get away from the office. So the fact that we actually have veterinarians now available at all times to help provide these services is really wonderful. And it also helps other veterinarians who would like to provide this service but just can't get away. So, so animal hospice is really a supportive and compassionate end-of-life care that focuses on alleviating suffering and safeguarding the relationships between pets and pet owners until death occurs via assisted passing, which would be humane euthanasia, or natural passing. And it really is a service just like human hospice, just like the focus and scope of human hospice, in that it takes into account not only the patient or the pet's needs, those being the medical needs, emotional, physical needs, but also the needs of the family. And we really are supporting both the pet and the pet's family during this time.
So engaging or using services of pet hospice, the pet can still have a natural death.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
I think that's an important point for our listeners, that it doesn't have to be a euthanasia situation. It's about making the pet comfortable and a more easier time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the confusion certainly could be with the term hospice. And I know that some folks in the field that meet annually, you know, kind of debated about what term to actually use, because the term hospice in human medicine obviously doesn't encompass the legalization of humane euthanasia. But and when even for myself, when I thought about hospice, I thought about supported natural death. But here, and, you know, it kind of works in reverse. Here, when we're using the term hospice, it includes supporting natural death and humane euthanasia. And sometimes one will kind of flow into the other and vice versa. So, but it's a broad scope in that regard.
Yeah. Well, I think it's good to know that there are things that we can do to help our pets at the end of their lifetimes when it's difficult for them. And if things progress, then there are other options as well.
Absolutely.
If they're suffering. So I think that's wonderful. What? So tell us about things that we can do as pet owners to assess the qualities of life in our pets. What do we need to look for?
So I think that assessing quality of life is for our animal companions can be extremely challenging, just because they can't tell us exactly what they're feeling and what they're experiencing and how they may change how they're feeling, you know, just like we do. So we're forced to make a lot of assumptions and to try and really understand what's going on for them. I do think it's helpful to kind of just look at a bunch of general areas, and I'll just kind of mention these. And there are many resources that you can find online in addition to on our website that can kind of talk about this in a little more detail. But certainly when I speak to people about quality of life, I'll kind of list some general overall qualities, such as the quality of their mobility, their appetite, not just are they eating or are they not eating, but are they only eating preferential food items? Kitty cats will typically lick the wet food only. What are their four favorite things in the whole wide world, and are they still interested in those things?
Mm-hmm.
How's their, yeah, that's a big one. It's good to write those down.
Yeah, and even though we probably haven't already done this, I know pet owners out there will go, oh, yeah, my dog loves this, this, and this, or my pet loves this, this, and this, and they already know this. They just haven't thought about that in that way.
Yeah, I think we all know that intuitively, and all of them are so unique and special and different in their preferences and personalities. But at this time, it is helpful to even actually write it down, so it's kind of concrete and visible, so you really have a good handle on it. So that can be real helpful, looking at how your relationship may or may not have been affected. Your quality time that you may have been spending with your sweet pet might be different now. For instance, if a dog has significantly impaired mobility, walks may be much shorter if they're happening at all. So the quality time for you all might be reduced. Pain, of course, is pain present? Are they appearing to be painful? Is it well controlled? Are they able to urinate and defecate normally? Or are they having trouble? Do they have increased frequency of either of the two? And these are just some kind of general overall qualities that are helpful to look at. And there are other a little bit more ambiguous things that are important that certainly can attribute to quality of life and suffering, such as, you know, hydration status, difficulty breathing, if they're persistently nauseous or agitated, fearful or confused, their emotional state. So those are just kind of some general things that you can look at. And if all of those are pretty significantly affected, or one of them is severely affected, you know, then we become concerned that quality certainly could be compromised. And there are other aspects of their life to look at as well.
And I know one thing that came up at the Angel Pets Conference when we were discussing this was the importance of having someone else's perspective, like a friend or another family member.
Yes.
Because sometimes we can be too close.
Yes, absolutely. That's a really good point. And it's very true, because we all just have our own personal histories, our own experiences, our own, you know, religious and ethical perspectives. And sometimes it can be really helpful to have some other opinions, because when, just like if you live with somebody, you might not notice that they've gained 20 pounds, but everyone else
right.
has. So it is really helpful to have those outside opinions to kind of maybe serve as a reality check to things you aren't seeing. And by the same token, it is really important to realize that everyone's opinion, although that it can be helpful, it really is filtered through their own background and history and ethics and all that kind of thing. So, you know, really the person that knows the very best is the primary caregiver. And, you know, and taking that into account, the fact that these opinions can be helpful, but they also may not resonate with what the primary caregiver is experiencing at home. So it's kind of one of those things that's sort of a fine line, that it is great to get other opinions and be open to that, and at the same time recognize that, you know, you really do know what your pet's experiencing.
Sure. Sure. And I think it's a I think the point I was wanting to make was that it's important to realize that you may be too close, or that you maybe need to step back and look at yourself and go, okay, I might be in a situation where I'm not seeing something that's progressing, and just being aware of that may help you, you know, take a second look, or, you know, but you're right, the pet owner is the one who is the primary caregiver and understands their pets best.
Yeah, but like you said, that is so true. I mean, it happens to all of us because, you know, we're so close and up close and personal that sometimes being objective is extremely difficult. So it is really great to have all that support and useful opinions, and at the same time having the courage to really be honest with yourself and evaluate what you think is happening.
Well, what are some other resources that are out there for us to help us during this time?
So some, you know, and general resources would be, you know, certainly your veterinarian can be very helpful in just providing concrete facts about particular disease processes, or explaining certain clinical signs that you might really not understand what they mean, or if they're uncomfortable for your pet. So, you know, your veterinarian can be really helpful. And then there are also a lot of other resources and organizations that are just, you know, fabulous, and whose sole focus is end-of-life care. So, as I mentioned earlier, the International Association for Animal Hospice and Palliative Care is a wonderful organization, and they are committed to just that, to helping to promote the just significantly high quality end-of-life care. And they have information for both professionals, veterinary professionals, animal professionals, and for pet owners. And they also have some educational webinars on all different topics. So that's a wonderful resource, and they can be found online at www.iaahpc.org. And then they're also having an annual conference this year in Indianapolis in October, which is a great way to learn more about these issues. Another great organization is the Argus Institute, which was created by Colorado State Veterinary School, and they have lots of online resources as well for both pet owners and veterinary professionals about all kinds of end-of-life issues. And
that's Argus, A-R-G-U-S?
That's Argus, A as in apple, R-G-U-S, the Argus Institute.
Okay, wonderful.
And one that I really loved that I came across at the Angel Pet Conference this year was the beautiful workbook, The Peaceful Path Pet Loss.
Mm.
And that can be found at that website, apeacefulpathpetloss.com. And that's just a beautiful workbook for those, you know, processing through the grief of losing a sweet animal companion. That's a beautiful, beautiful workbook that can really be cathartic and helpful. So there's also a lot of resources on our website as well, Four Paws Farewell, under Pet Loss Resources.
And the four is the number four?
The number four. It'll come up either way, but yeah, the number Paws Farewell.
All right.
Yeah.
Four Paws
Farewell.com.
Farewell. Wonderful. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. What is it you most want people to know?
I think for me personally, you know, the most important thing to me is for folks to know that there is loving, compassionate, professional care available for our sweet, beloved pets during the final stages of their lives. And I would invite all of our listeners to, you know, dialogue with their veterinarians about what services they offer regarding such care, the different things that we've touched on briefly or mentioned, you know, which would be home euthanasia services, animal hospice services, and, you know, and or end-of-life consultations. And if these services aren't offered, thanks to good old technology, you can go ahead and Google home euthanasia or animal hospice in your area, and it's likely you will find a veterinarian in your area that is solely providing these types of services. Lap of Love is a wonderful organization that has veterinarians all over the country providing end-of-life services, and if you go to their website, www.lapoflove.com, and put in your zip code, that can help you locate a veterinarian in your area if there is one. So for me, that's what's most important is getting these sweet pets the very best care possible for not only their passing, but also the final stages of that.
Yeah. And I know that is providing a lot of comfort and relief to our listeners out there, just knowing that there can be things that can be done to help them and help our pets during this time. And so I just want to thank you for being here and for sharing your knowledge and your wisdom about this. Dr. Beth Marchitelli, forepawsfarewell.com. You can read more about her. Thank you so much for being here and for the loving work that you do.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Lee. It was wonderful to be with you today.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Marchitelli.
Thanks.
So, yep, that's wonderful. Thank you to both of our guests, Lola Ball and Dr. Beth Marchitelli, today for their wonderful insight and sharing their wisdom. Our guest next show will be Heather Merrill of New England Pet Hospice, who will be giving us a lot of great caregiver support tips and suggestions. Please join us for our next show in 2 weeks. Please visit thepethonoring.com or Pet Honoring Facebook page to find out more about us and what Pet Honoring is up to, and send in a pet name to be honored on the June 9th United Pet Honoring Ceremony. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and thank you for joining us. Lots of love to you all. Thank you for joining us. Please visit pethonoring.com or email me at pethonoring.com.